Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America on Sunday, September 18th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Simpoga in Washington.
People in Southwest are in a catastrophic situation, which is called IBC-5. That number was 112,470 in June 4. So from June 4 to September 12, we have new 101,660 people increase.
Officials and aid workers in Somalia's drought-stricken south say the area is expecting many deaths from famine if aid is not quickly scaled up.
And therefore, it's quite tricky for Namibia to move into that direction to now go on large-scale oil exploration. There's also, of course, ecological dangers, both the offshore oil exploration, but particularly the one in the Kavango region.
The first green hydrogen power plant being built in Africa is expected to begin producing electricity in Namibia in 2024.
And oftentimes the political impact of these things, because politically speaking, remember, at times you're going to be slaughtering animals that belong to farmers and may actually push them further into abject poverty. Because a lot of the times the compensation for those animals that have been slaughtered is nowhere near the equivalent value.
And Botswana, one of Africa's largest beef producers, has announced to cull more than 10,000 cattle in the country's northeast in a bid to fight an outbreak of foot and mouth disease. Those and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. Officials and aid workers in Somalia's drought-stricken south say the area is expecting many deaths from famine if aid is not quickly scaled up. A doctor tells VOA that one child is dying per day at his hospital due to malnutrition. Mohamed Daisani traveled to the areas thought likely to experience famine and sent this report from Wajid, Somalia.
Somalia's southwest state is one of the places the United Nations expects famine to arise as the prolonged and worst drought in 40 years continues to devastate the country. State Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management Minister Nasir Arush told VOA in an interview after he visited hard-hit areas, including Wajid in Bokol region, that the situation is very, very bad.
You know, we have been dealing this drought for the last 3 years, but the situation is getting really, really bad. The latest report show 214,130 people in Southwest are in a catastrophic situation, which is called IBC-5. That number was 112,470 in June 4. So from June 4 to September 12, we have new 101,660 people increase.
He said the urgent situation needs an urgent response. Dr. Saeed Yusuf Mohammed works at the Stabilization Center, a unit inside the biggest hospital in Southwest State. He tells VOA that the drought is having a devastating toll on children. He said that every day a child is dying due to malnutrition at his stabilization center. He says you can see that the number of patients who need treatment for malnutrition is increasing, and there are times when the hospital reaches beyond its capacity, and now it is possible to admit over 90 patients a week and sometimes more than 20 a day. Made Momen is 60 years old, a father of 9 children. He arrived at this hospital with his malnourished granddaughter. He said he received $8 loans from a family member to reach the hospital that is located over 100 kilometers from their settlement. He said people there are devastated by the drought that killed all their livestock and put the population at risk of death, especially their children. He says that the parents whose children are ill from malnutrition don't have resources to transport them to hospitals for treatment. He says if the drought continues until next year, the situation will be worse than it is now. He says people there don't have anywhere else to go. In a trip for journalists to the famine-projected areas in Southwest, arranged by the aid agency World Vision, Tobias Olu, the World Vision operations manager, tells VOA that after four seasons of rain failure, more than 7 million people are facing starvation. In some places, reaching the famine stage, he said about 1 million people have been displaced and they are moving from locations where they cannot get help to locations where they can get help.
Certain areas have been affected more than the others. We are seeing Baidoa is one of the areas that is seriously affected, and also Burakaba. These are both in Bay region of Southwest states. As an organization, we are providing cash so that people can buy food. We are providing assistance in water so that people can have water to drink. We are also providing protection programs to ensure that girls and women are protected from gender-based violence.
He said that the current drought is worse than the 2011 drought that killed thousands of Somalis because of a combination of Somalia's internal conflict, four consecutive rain failures, and food prices skyrocketing due to Ukraine war. Patrick Wilton is the spokesman for the World Food Program Somalia. He tells VOA that the World Vision has been warning for months and can't wait for declaration of famine to act. It will be too late.
We have been working to scale up humanitarian assistance to unprecedented levels in Somalia, despite limited resources. In July, WFP reached 3.7 million people in Somalia with life-saving relief assistance, more than double the number in April, the most we've ever reached in Somalia in a single month. We also reached over 300,000 people with treatment for malnutrition.
The Somali government last year declared the drought a national emergency and called for urgent help. Mohamed Daisane for VOA News, Wajid, Somalia.
Communities in Uganda's Adjumani district are turning to communal farms as a solution to food shortages and to promote increased production. The two groups will also use food from the joint farms to fight stunting among children, especially in refugee settlements. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
In the wake of soaring food prices, some groups in the district are already harvesting some crops from pilot farms. South Sudan refugee Harriet Drani is among those already benefiting from harvesting cassava, which is a staple food in the area.
We gain a lot from that field. That cassava give us for our support. We are going to support our children from school. Feeding is also there. We are even getting some other money for changing some other diet.
Another South Sudanese refugee, Peter Olungo, says the cassava they have harvested so far has helped them supplement food rations.
The food they have given us is not enough, but right now I think that is improvement because of this cassava. Even though you get few ratio, so this cassava will help. Right now, even though you go in the market, you'll get more cassava people are selling there, and the price is become cheaper.
James Odongo is a local council chairperson of Zaipi sub-county, one of those hosting South Sudan refugees in Adjumani district. He says Both the refugees and the local communities are scrambling for food.
And all this community, the host community and the refugee community, you know, they struggle over the small resources we have, the food we build here. So there is a problem. As a result, if you go to market like today is a market day. If you go to market, you'll find things have risen so much. It is greatly, and it's affecting the community so much.
About 3,000 acres of land have so far been offered by residents of Adjumani district for communal farming. Emmanuel Mawawi is one of the landowners.
We decided with the community to hand over this land so that we are able to produce enough food for our community. Because since we hosted the refugees from South Sudan, our food production has been low and the rate of consumption is so high. So we decided to hand over this land so that the food production shall increase in our community, which will help the host community of us in these communities and the refugees in our neighboring communities.
Mariam Akrol is a communication advocate with Action Against Hunger, a non-government organization supporting communal farming. She says they are encouraging the refugees and their hosts to work together to improve their nutrition and their livelihoods through the sale of the surplus harvests.
We have decided to group them randomly in groups of 10s, in groups of 20s, in groups of 30s, host communities and refugees. And this is giving them additional access to land for production. And then we have also encouraged them to grow the nutritious staple food crops, the granas, the simsim, so that, you know, they are food and nutrition secure.
Raphael Majezi is Uganda's Minister for Local Government.
It's possible to defeat hunger within the refugee communities, not by giving them handouts, but by, you know, working with them. And they use their own talents, their own efforts. They grow their food, they eat it, they sell it, they make money. It's a transition from being a refugee as a challenge to the country, to a refugee as being part of the growing economy.
Majezi is confident that the effort will help refugees reduce hunger and promote peace between refugees and host communities. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The green hydrogen power plant being built in Africa is expected to begin producing electricity in Namibia in 2024, an official from the French company told Reuters news agency last week. Namibia is championing the clean energy, but this month it also said billions of barrels were discovered off the coast after many failed attempts at drilling. Vitalio Angula reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
It's something of a dilemma for Namibia, a plant producing so-called green hydrogen, a clean power source that can be potentially used for industry and electrical vehicles, is due to open in less than 2 years. Green hydrogen is produced from natural resources like wind and sun, both of which Namibia has in abundance. At the same time, oil companies, Shell and Total, have recently discovered oil deposits about 290 kilometers off the coast of Namibia. Herbert Jau, the head of local non-profit Economic and Social Justice Trust, wants Namibia to forsake oil drilling and focus on green hydrogen, a much-touted energy source of the future. However, Jau says it is tricky for Namibia to give up possible oil revenues when advanced nations are still making use of fossil fuels, even as carbon emissions cause global warming.
The oil discovery coincides with what needs to be the end of fossil fuels, and therefore it's quite tricky for Namibia to move into that direction to now go on large-scale oil exploration. It has also, of course, ecological dangers, both the offshore oil exploration, but particularly the one in the Kavango region. Now, when you look at the global trend and the much talked about climate change and global warming and how it has resulted in massive floods and droughts in various countries of the world, Namibia could become a front runner in in renewable energy, particularly solar, but there's even this idea mooted of green hydrogen.
Maggie Shino, the petrol commissioner at the Ministry of Mines and Energy, cautions there is still a long way to go before Namibia could become an oil-producing nation.
But what we need to understand is that for us, as explorers, we still have a very long journey ahead of us before we can be able to change the Namibian narrative to say that we are an oil-producing nation. We are oil finders. We have oil accumulation, but we are not yet an oil-producing nation. For us to get to that stage, a lot of work still needs to be done.
Minister of Mines and Energy, Tom Alvendo, said even if Namibia does begin to produce oil, it will have competition from other African countries, and citizens should not expect a financial windfall from oil revenue.
We just came back from an oil and gas conference that was held in Senegal. Senegal has discovered a lot of oil and gas. So is Ghana. Uganda has got oil, although they haven't produced yet. So is Equatorial Guinea.
The oil deposits off the coast are estimated at more than 1 billion barrels. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
Commission of Zambia has suspended by-elections in Kwacha and Kabushi constituencies. The announcement follows a decision by the High Court in the capital Lusaka. It came as former Foreign Minister Joy Malanji and former Minister for Lusaka Bowman Lusambo petitioned the court to stop the vote in their respective constituencies. The court's decision and the withdrawal of an independent candidate forced the Electoral Commission to suspend the by-elections until further notice. Meanwhile, President Hakainde Hichilema has also suspended Ms. Lilian Siyuni, the Director of Public Prosecution. This following a recommendation contained in a report by the Judicial Complaints Commission. For the latest developments, VOA's Peter Klote reached Longisani Zulu, the president of the Laws Association of Zambia.
Laws actually is very happy because it is expected that once the courts of law, who are the final arbiters of any dispute in this country, make a decision, institutions of governance in line with the rule of law are expected to comply. So compliance of the ECZ to suspend the election in line with the orders of the High Court is what was expected and nothing else. And that it has happened is very welcome and is what is expected in a country anchored on constitutionalism and rule of law.
The LAS, or the Law Association of Zambia, people are saying that LAS has done well, but they think LAS should be a little bit more forceful in its statement about a decision recently by the Electoral Commission of Zambia to proceed or refuse to accept some nominations, which led to this court petition. Do you think the criticism leveled against LAS is justified?
Well, LAS's actions are governed by a statute, which is the Law Association of Zambia, Chapter 31 of the Laws of Zambia. And our mandate is expressed in terms of what we are expected to do. And we will only be guided by that particular piece of legislation. We know the public will expect different things from the Law Association of Zambia. And criticism in a democracy is always welcome. But ultimately, our role is not to please one over the other. It's merely to state what we believe is our considered view with the ultimate aim of entrenching and promoting rule of law in this country. So we expect different views from different people in terms of what their view of what Laos must do. And our guiding principle is principally Section 4 of our founding statute. And we are really trying to do just that.
So what is Laos's position on the what some people describe as the controversy surrounding the candidacy of Patriotic Front candidates, talking about former Foreign Minister Joe Malanje and former Lusaka Minister Bowman? Does Laos consider them eligible to contest if the Electoral Commission decides to open nomination for the by-elections in their respective constituencies?
It's not even what Laos's view is. The courts have already dealt with the matter, and the Constitutional Court has guided. And Laos is only, you know, concerned about what the judiciary, in this case, the court mandated to deal with constitutional matters, which is the Constitutional Court, has guided on the matter. So we don't think it's even about what Laos thinks or what another person thinks. It's really what the courts of law have said should be the case. And they have been emphatic that disqualification and nullification are two different things. And in their view, in the latest judgment from the court of law, is that there is no bar. And what has happened is merely a nullification of the two candidates' seats. So Laos's view is merely to look to what the court have said, and we're guided by what the court will always say on any matter.
That was Lungisana Zulu, the president of the Law Association of Zambia. He was speaking with my colleague Peter Klote. In one of his first acts in office, Kenya's new president, William Ruto, ordered cargo containers from incoming ships to be emptied at the port of Mombasa instead of in the capital, Nairobi. Ruto said he's carrying out a campaign promise, though there are concerns the move would overwhelm facilities at the Mombasa port. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
In 2019, the Kenyan government shifted cargo clearance operations from the Indian Ocean port of Mombasa to the inland cities of Nairobi and Naivasha. This week, President William Ruto directed that the operations be returned to Mombasa.
I will be issuing instructions for clearing of goods and other attendant operational issues to revert to the port of Mombasa, as I made a commitment. To Kenyans. This will restore thousands of jobs in the city of Mombasa.
Former President Uhuru Kenyatta had moved cargo clearance to Nairobi to increase use of the standard gauge railway, which was built with a $4.5 billion loan from China. The move forced companies to pay transport fees to use the railway, a decision Kenyan officials saw as the best way to repay the loan. Ruto's decision, announced Tuesday, is welcomed by newly elected Mombasa Governor Abdul Somad Sharif Nasir, who said the need to repay the debt is no reason to kill business at his city's port. We have been fighting for it for a long time, and we said openly, even if it was to repay the SGR debt, there are other ways to repay it. Nasir says it is not a must to kill the economy of one part of the country. According to the Economic Survey of 2022, SGR usage increased by 22.6% in 2021 and made $108 million, up from $87 million in 2020. The increase is attributed to cargo shipments in Nairobi, with cargo clearance operations shifting back to Mombasa. Many people are concerned that the railway would lose business to trucking companies, making it difficult for the railway to pay its debt and ultimately shifting the cost of its construction to taxpayers. Some traders argue that historically, the Mombasa port has been slow to unload and transport cargo containers. Gedishoni Kiara, an economics teacher at the University of Nairobi, predicts the Mombasa port will not be able to handle the increased responsibilities.
Very shortly, we shall start getting the impact of the delay in the cargo and the other inconveniences of a crowding of Mombasa Highway and corruption with the police force at every point.
Governance and urban development expert Alfred Omenya is hopeful the problems can be overcome if the government appoints good managers to run the port.
I think the president did the right thing. We just hope that it's not an ad hoc political action, but it will be an action that's actually based on coherent planning and coherent strategy and coherent development of our country.
In a worst-case scenario, congestion and corruption at the Mombasa port will make traders from neighbouring countries to flock other ports, making Kenya lose much-needed revenue for developing and servicing its debt. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Botswana has announced it will cull more than 10,000 cattle in the country's northeast in a bid to fight an outbreak of foot and mouth disease. One of Africa's largest beef producers, Botswana was forced in August to halt beef exports over the virus, including to the lucrative European Union. Mukundisi Dube reports from Habarone, Botswana.
Assistant Minister for Agriculture Molebazi Molebazi says the decision to kill affected livestock was taken following consultations with disease control experts. He says the decision to depopulate is the one we have taken. We took the decision after consultation with experts. We don't want any traces of the virus to remain or to have any further viral circulation. Molebazi says 19,000 cattle are in the affected zone, which is near the Zimbabwe border, and more than 10,000 will be slaughtered. Some goats and sheep will also be killed. Veterinarian Mbatsi Mwaziduma says killing will mean farmers have to be compensated.
It comes at a great cost because it means people have to be compensated, etc. And there's also the environmental issues of animals that have been slaughtered. How do you dispose of them safely?
Mwaziduma says in disease control, there should be certain considerations, particularly for the affected farmers.
When you're trying to control the disease, you also have to consider the economic, the social, and oftentimes the political impact of these things. Because politically speaking, remember, at times you're going to be slaughtering animals that belong to farmers and may actually push them further into abject poverty. Because a lot of the times the compensation for those animals that have been slaughtered is nowhere near the equivalent value. If they were to sell them at market.
Bose Situpa, a farmer from the affected region, says while the livelihoods of many would be affected, the government had to contain the disease.
It is a good move, yes, to try and contain the spread of the disease. But at the same time, it is not too good to the farmers because the government compensation is always lower than what the value of what the farmer would be having. So that is the only problem. But apart from that, I think the move is good, and because it's purely meant to protect the export market, which is very key to our economy.
Roughly half of Botswana's beef exports are to the EU, sending about 9,000 tons of the product each year. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Habaroni.
A Ugandan exporter is calling on the government to financially support agricultural businesses in the East African country. This, the exporter says, will significantly boost the country's exports and GDP. James Kanyije, the CEO of KK Fresh Produce Exporters Limited, also called for an irrigation program for all farmers. He says this will help sustain agriculture to feed citizens and improve on exports. His remarks come after President Yoweri Museveni formed an advisory group comprising public and private sector players to help open up these sectors for investment to the country's regional and international partners. The committee is tasked with reviewing policies and measures with a renewed approach on how Uganda can increase trade with its neighbors and with wealthy nations, including the UK, the European Union, and the US. For more on this call for more financial help to agricultural businesses, VOA's Peter Clote reached James Kanyije.
The market is there, but we have to scale up and have produce to deliver into the market. Currently, we need to invest in irrigation. We need to invest in a cold chain to support the quality, to invest in a global gap, to so that we can sell our produce into supermarket and wholesale in Europe, which the market is limitless. But because of lack of capital for investment, patient money, and enough, not small money, to invest in all systems to produce food, enough food to deliver to the market. And this is what we are looking at, to scale up. Because when the drought comes, we ship nothing. When the rains comes, and also the quality of our systems is down. So we want to scale up and deliver all what is needed in the market, because the market is limitless.
What role do you think the government can play in partnership with private individuals like you in order to help you with, you know, either raising the capital or helping you in your business activities to export more?
So what we want from government is that we want government guarantees. If they can guarantee capital from those who have it, and for us, we can pay it back as patient capital. I can say to guarantee us in certain organizations who have the money, including banks, so that we a soft loan like that, so that we can invest in the system. Because food industry requires a lot of money, and it has a lot of opportunities to employ our people in Uganda, homesteads, incomes to come in, and the country to increase our GDP is a big opportunity, but we are not seizing it. And every time we hear there are billions of dollars in a government which is not being used, the people borrow it, and then it keeps there, and the Ugandan keeps on paying interest on the loan which is kept in the Bank of Uganda, Ministry of Finance. We need such money guaranteed by the government.
A lot of people have expressed concern about why Africa still relies heavily on natural rain-fed agriculture when we could invest in irrigation and ensure consistency in our ability to produce food, not only for the local market, for the export. For the people like you who are in this field of agriculture, what can be done in order to help you achieve your aim, feed the local population, and export?
The problem is that the African governments have not invested enough capital in agriculture because there are resources in agriculture because of lack of investment. So they want to invest little money, which does not take the industry forward. Instead, it takes the industry backward. And with the market availability, I don't see why the governments cannot decide to invest enough money. You see, when we talk about enough money, we talk money that will cater from the grassroots, from the seed to the producer, to the chemical issues, to the systems, what I call like a certification, so that we can meet all conditions to deliver food in the market. Yeah, because into supermarkets, because now we are doing to the wholesale market, which is even also not good because we depend on rain. So I think African countries, African leaders must wake up and invest more in agriculture, because that's where our population are. If you look at Uganda, and in particular, because I don't want to speak for others, 68% of our Ugandans are in subsistence farming.
Talking about the quality of product, you know, these international markets have standards that you have to meet in order for them to get into that market. How do you ensure that the product that you export meet quality standard, and what advice will you share to others who want to get into this business?
I can say we are not meeting standards. I can say proudly, because it's not my wish. But you have requirements that you need to meet the standards. We are still helped by the wholesalers, the Asian market in Europe, where you deliver wholesale. For them, they get the better one, clean them, and then package them, put a standard on the paper, and deliver to the supermarket. They earn 7 times more than you want to gain. And they end up tripling, 100 times better than the exporter, and the farmer is the last resort.
That was James Kanyije, the CEO of KK Fresh Produce Exporters Limited. He was speaking with my colleague Peter Klote from Kampala. This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by music from our African collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's go to Abuja and join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Douglas, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. We begin the sports with the Berlin Marathon, where Eliud Kipchoge, the only man to have run the marathon distance in under 2 hours, has played down his chances of breaking that barrier in the Berlin Marathon next Sunday. The Kenyan is a hot favorite to win in the German capital, and the famously fast Berlin course has sparked speculation that the 37-year-old Kipchoge will attempt to dip under the 2-hour barrier in a normal race. To do so, he will have to compete without the teams of pacemakers and laser guidance that aided him when he made history in the tailor-made record attempt in Vienna in 2019. Staying with athletics, World Athletics has quietly entered into an agreement to lend $2 million to Diamond League AG. The agreement was disclosed in the small print of the recently published World Athletics 2021 financial report. While the reason for the loan is not disclosed, the schedule of payment is. The loan is payable in 2 installments as of end of March 2023 and 24. The loan is payable in 2 installments as of end of March 2023 and 2024. It is to be fully reimbursed to World Athletics by end of June 2025. Away from athletics, former Nigerian junior international Orji Okonkwo has had his 4-year ban for a doping violation by the Italian National Anti-Doping Tribunal extended worldwide by World Football Governing Body FIFA. A statement by Ademola Olajire, Director of Communications at the Nigerian Football Federation, on Saturday said FIFA's verdict was contained in its ruling on the case for worldwide extension of the ban brought before it by the Italian NADO. Chairperson of the FIFA Disciplinary Committee, George Ivan Palacio, affirmed that the player had been cited properly and that the decision complies with the regulations of FIFA. He said extending the sanctions does not conflict with public order or with accepted standards of behavior. The 4-year ban on the player is between February 25th and February 24th, 2026. In beach soccer news, the draws for the Beach Soccer Africa Cup of Nations Mozambique 2022, scheduled for the 21st to the 28th of October, were held in the Mozambican capital, Maputo, on Friday. In accordance with the draw procedure, host Mozambique was placed in Group A. They are joined by Malawi, who will be taking part in their first Beach Soccer AFCON, Nigeria, who were bronze medalists in 2015 and finalists in 2016 and 2018, and Morocco, regular participants in the finals and bronze medalists in the last edition. In Group B, Senegal, defending champion, will share the stage with Uganda, who will participate in their second Beach Soccer AFCON after having been in the semi-finals in 2021. Madagascar, winner of the tournament organized in 2015 in the Seychelles, and also Egypt, bronze medalist in 2016 and 2018. And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Douglas.
Thanks, Samson. And now it's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Yeah. make we the fire gang. Feel the why you the door? I know they like to the blow. Give me chance, make I show you how I feel. Treat you special like a queen. Cool you down, make we fire gang. Tango, make we dey close like on the pan up and grove. Baby, no hide. How you dey feel? You want love? Scared of heartbreak or fabric, I know. You say I look like Casanova. For those who I love, baby, I go hard. Now woman who love, now him go break hearts. Oh man, no go end the film, my no start. Jory, now you be the one on the genet. They connect to your Wi-Fi glow unlimited. If you give me that base, I'll get addicted. Throw a granite from Kalashin straight to the net. I go see the summer, papana, panana. I go see the summer, see Giza, Zaga, Zaga. I go see the summer, pick it back, I pick it down. I go see the summer, move for our beam, move for town. I'm okay, wait in the sun. I didn't wait for you to give me some. Give me the green light. Make me the fire down. Feel the day, why you the door? I know they like to the blow. Give me chance, make I show you how I feel. Treat you special like a queen, cool you down, make we fire down. To tango, make we dey close like on the pan up and grove. Baby, no hide, how you dey feel, you want love. Scared of heartbreak, or fabric, I know. Make we see the sun. You know it takes two to tango. Make we see the sun. Close like on the pan up and grove. Make we see the sun. How you dey feel, you want love. Make we see the sun. Heartbreak, or fabric, I know. I'm again, wait in the sun. I didn't wait for you to give me some. Give me the green light. Make we the fire down. Feel the day, why you the door? I know they, like to the blow. Give me chance, make I show you how I feel. Treat you special like a queen. Cool you down, make we fire down. Cool you down. Get it!
Inadi dance. Baby, ile mitomilima tuliyopita uliona, nikavumilia nikang'ang'ana, si unaona kuna vijidada vinadanga, utaona vikijipitisha vinatingisha, utaona wambie siongezi neno nishawe.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoyed the program tonight. And as you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. From the Nightline Africa team, we thank you for joining us, and I'm your host, Douglas Impoga in Washington, wishing you a very good evening.